welcome back to another exciting episode of Extra Features Podcast. Julianne Blox decided to come back for third or fourth time. I can't remember. Her film, The Last Statement, we're going to get into. Welcome back.
I'm so happy to be here. I can't remember either how many times we spoke, but each time is fun.
Well, that's awesome. I want to hear. Great to hear.
Simon Watson.
This film is heavy.
It is. Yeah. There's no doubt about that. So, I actually decided I never want to do a short film again before I did Last Statement, and then I read the script, and then I decided, actually, I make an exception.
So, you made an exception. So, you said after your last film, you weren't going to write anything heavy?
I think this is really the heaviest subject I've ever taken on. I mean, the thing is also, I'm not the sole director. There are 10 others roundabout. So I was a lead producer and I put everything together. But at some point I said, I can't do this on no budget, because usually if you do a short film, you don't have any budget, right? So I need people to help me with. And since I was working, by that time, I was working on this collaborative feature film called Train Station, where 40, 42 directors, something like that, contributed to a feature film, everyone doing 2 minutes. I actually thought maybe I can do something similar, and already knew several people who I'd like to work with. So I contacted those, and they needed to be in the United States because, well, this Last Statement, as you know, is a film about the death penalty. I would classify it as, I think, art house drama, something like this. And we needed people, native English speakers from the States, because there are not that many actually, like in Germany, you have access to, or like filmmakers in general can have access to. So that's how it started.
So, you did a little bit more. I have original concept written out, I have writer, I have project artist. You did it all. That's a lot of hats.
It is. So the writer is usually a playwright writer. So she approached me with a script, which was a stage play. I read it and I thought, this is very visual in a way. The stage play was meant to be people talking in front of a black or white wall, and just very focusing on the performer or actor themselves, him or herself. So then I tried to do this, and I was like, look, like kind of at some point it dawned on me, you know what, if we do it this way, we have like a 17 to 25 minute short film, that's what I thought at that time, how long it would be, where we only have close-ups of people talking in front of a black wall or something, I'm not sure this is going to fly. So we need something else. And then that's where this original concept came in. So then Ola and I were brainstorming, and somehow the idea emerged, what if these are actually last statements of people who were on death row, and what if we place them in something they can imagine shortly before their death? So it could be like a dream, it could be the place where they committed a crime, or the crime why they are on death row. It could be something they wished they'd be, so like a happy memory or something like that. Anything really. And then because we were 10 directors, each of those directors got more or less the liberty to choose the setting for their statement. So the thing was, the statement cannot be altered because they are real, but you can create a story around it where this person would like him or herself to see when saying this. And this is how like these different segments came about. And then you usually, as director or producer director of your segment, you're just left with the task to find one location, one actor, and the background story around that, which is a lot easier for no budget than finding 17 directors and 17 locations.
So you used the one location the whole time? That's what I'm understanding here?
I myself, for my segment, I did. But then, you know, like there are other directors. So like we have more segments than directors because some did too. So matter of fact, I actually had two locations. So my segments were like, there's one inmate and he's like trying to climb a tree and to get a kite from a tree.
Yeah.
So this one, so that was somewhere around Berlin where we found this tree we wanted to shoot at. And then the second thing is I have the female offender and she sits on a couch, which was actually at my apartment, and we just kind of redecorated one room, so basically used it as set.
So people come into your apartment, are you comfortable with that as a filmmaker? Do they know where you live? Or you're like, nope, I'm independent, this is what I have available, we got to use it?
Most filmmakers, I think, if you're starting your career, or like if you're not kind of really, if the crew, like put it differently, if the crew is small enough, I don't have a problem with that, because then, you know, like I want to make it happen. And this project wasn't to earn any money, it was because I really wanted to do that. So, and it wasn't like kind of 50 people ran through my apartment, plus all these people were usually people I really knew before, since they agreed to do this for no pay. It's a weekend thing, just because they liked my work or they wanted to work on this project, stuff like that. So I'm okay with this. If you ask me if I would let like a full-blown Hollywood crew into my apartment or house, no.
That answered my question. I guess my next big thing is, why death row inmates? I mean, I don't know. This is not something I could find people saying, oh, yeah, I enjoyed that.
Well, not every film you do, specifically if you do short films, needs to have a topic where you say you're just entertaining people. For me, the script or the stage play in the first instance felt like something which needed to be said. So this compilation of your last statements from these offenders was something I found very, maybe touching is even the wrong word, but it makes very real that these are human beings with all their flaws, and specifically flaws, but you know, like as different as humans are, so were the last statements. And everyone can have their own opinion if they are pro or con the death penalty. I'm pretty sure everyone who was working on this film doesn't like the death penalty in itself. We did try to not have a preaching film, so we just wanted to point out that this can be very different, you know, like that there are lots of layers which need to be considered if you actually put someone to, like, yeah, well, if you kill someone for a crime he or she committed. So I would say I just had the feeling this needs to be said, like it's something which was important to me, and I wanted to work on this to make a statement.
I guess my next question is, where does this film go? I mean, I understand it can go to film festivals, but ideally you want to make something on your work you put in and get exposure to the other directors. Where does it go from here?
Well, doing a short film, it's usually film festivals, and then you put it up online, either paid or at some point for free, because in my personal experience, short films are really for your portfolio, exposure, something like this. It's not for you to earn any money, which also means like it's very tough to actually earn something from distribution from your short film. For this one, I would say it was extra difficult, because also it's quite long for a short film, which means it's very hard to put it to festivals. So festivals usually like, I mean, the sweet spot, I would say, is around 10 minutes, because if you come in with 30 minutes, then they either can show your film or three other films. And usually they would always go for the three other films unless they find yours is exceptional, exceptional good. This is also why, for quite a while, this film hasn't really found the audience it deserves, I think. And this is why we just, and then this is not the only film like about human rights, which kind of has a festival life or maybe short, long festival circuit, whatever. And then more or less, that's it. So we combined a couple of those films and called the series We Are All Human. And they have very different topics. So the other films in the series kind of are about a, it's called The Glass Man, and it's in Southeast Asia. It's he is a special kid who always breaks his bones, it's like glass bones, and how he helps and how he lives and how he's actually kind of helping disabled children in a school for disabled. And then we have like one which is called Girl-Hearted, about like a young trans girl, like who is in the body of a boy, but she is a girl. And the last one is like a war veteran in Vietnam talking about all like the war, well, how you call that? Basically all the victims of the landmines and stuff. So kind of what's left. And, you know, if you see all this together, I think it gives a very diverse picture of what can go on in the world. And, you know, like if you... there's no direct connection besides we are human, and that's exactly the point. So we have had actually quite good response so far. I mean, this is just recently. So not giving up to find the audience for the film.
Wouldn't that be, I don't mean, I can't say that I would go to a film festival and go, that's the one I'm going to see. I think I'd be too depressed afterwards.
I wouldn't say the audience or like the target audience for films like this is huge, but there are definitely people who enjoy watching films which are mind-bending, experimental, are just kind of putting new light on a subject in a different way as you haven't seen it before. It's usually never the films which are kind of doing well at the box office, which I totally understand, because that's not something you watch because you want to be entertained or you want to eat popcorn or you go out with your friends. So from that perspective, that's not it. No, last statement is different.
Did one of the In My Statement strike you as different than the other ones, or you all felt they had the same resonance?
Sorry, can you repeat the question?
Did you find one statement from the inmate stood out over the other ones, or did you all feel they're about the same?
I wouldn't say there's one which stood out. I personally have obviously some which I like more from a filmmaker's perspective and some I like less. But as a team of directors, we kind of agreed all on the film as it is. So which means like all of us think that there is a consistent quality. As said, like not kind of that, it's not kind of like just a straight line. It goes up and down a bit, but the thing is nothing where we say, well, that destroys the film.
Did you find working with a multitude of directors very difficult or easy?
I think for me it was easy because I had this experience from Train Station, from this feature film I was talking about. Since I had, I don't know, by then I had like 3 years of experience doing this. Train Station took 7 years to complete, so there were four more years coming. And they have some sort of, in the internet, they programmed some sort of platform where you could exchange ideas. And I haven't met like just a few, one or two, and like the rest I've never met really. So just chatted online. And from that experience, it wasn't hard.
So when you're being in charge of the project, did you find most of the directors had their stuff in time, or did you have to deal with lateness or anything like that?
A bit, but not extensively. Like obviously there are people who are more invested than others, but all in all, I can't remember that anyone stood out as being not cooperative. I mean, you wouldn't sign up to a project like this if you don't want to do it.
Well, one would hope so. And what about the actors involved? I mean, you have quite a number of people you guys would have to get. And you were telling me earlier that you needed Americans that spoke really good English.
most of the directors are American, so, and they had just to find one or two actors for their specific segments. So as I said, if you break it down, it's not so many per person.
Fair enough. Now, how do you get a budget for this of any kind? If you're somebody,
there wasn't any.
But I mean, you still have to, so everybody does it for free?
Yes.
Wow. So you're really just giving your time away then.
Mm-hmm. Again, specifically if, like, that is much easier if you only have one shooting day. So usually, like, one of these segments, so let's say, like, one of the offenders, they will be shot on one day. So what you are asking is, look, we do this project about the death penalty. It's artistic in a way. So you want to do it or not? It's one day of your life. So, and that's something which is obviously much easier to say, yes, I do that, than if you ask someone to commit 3 weeks of their life.
That makes sense. So I still go, so you're, after you send this film to the film festival, I mean, I still feel there has to be some monetary value you want in the future. I mean, I understand you're saying short films don't make money, but some must. There must be some avenue for a short film to go. So are you telling me
there are some short film channels and stuff like this, but because maybe of the nature of the topic, we never really found anyone who wanted to do something with it. And as I said, so just now we actually did it ourselves. So I can't say how much money there will be in this. And frankly speaking, that's for this specific film, that's not my main reason to push it. I mean, even if I earn money, I have to split it like amongst all the film crews and give all the other ones. So, you know, like if we make $100, I might get 10. So, which means, you know, like everyone who participated in this project knew that. So it's more like, if you do a short film like this, it's more kind of a passion project. You're not expecting to have like any monetary outcome. That said, obviously, if a lot of people watch it, and that's what we all want, there will be some money. So now we're trying to promote this. I mean, the landscape has changed. So back then when we did this, series weren't as huge as they are now. I think over the last couple of years that grew just exponentially, which means as series, now as we promote it, I think there are better chances that we really get an audience.
Oh, it works out. Now, you've also told me earlier, before we have a pre-interview, people, sorry, you've started your own podcast.
Yes, I did. So since I'm always kind of just thinking about films, I thought to stay in touch with all these lovely people I really like to meet and who are really great, to interview them in my own podcast, talking about their experience, what they did. And they're people like who never say anything during any making of film. Like you very seldomly hear, let's say, the light crew talking, or makeup artists, not as often. So I think it might, like, I find it interesting to just hear their take on the entire subject.
Before we continue with my next question, what's the name of the podcast where everybody can find it?
J Blockbuster Adventures. I can send you the link.
I'll put it in the show notes. So when you're
Perfect.
Talking to a makeup artist, what do you look for as questions? You go, do you have a shoot in mind you did with this person? Or is it somebody who admired their work? Like, how do you broach that as a topic?
If I talk to people and interview them?
Yes.
So far, I haven't talked to that many. It was people I wanted to catch up with for a long time, and I worked on a project and I admired their work. So that I knew if I tell them, look, I generally want to work with you again, that's absolutely true, which is actually true for a lot of people I work with. Since, you know, like if you cruise someone, you think about, like, do you want that this person is doing their job? And there were a lot of lovely people. And then for the specific questions, the experience of doing a project together is a good start. So you can then kind of just go from there.
But I think you need more than that. That's what I'm trying to get at. I understand you worked on a makeup project, but I wouldn't even know what to ask a makeup person or an assistant DP or, I don't know, the gaffer.
All right. Get it. So my angle is if for someone like you who wouldn't know what to ask, the only reason why you wouldn't know what to ask is because you don't know much about their job.
That is correct.
So I'm thinking of if someone wants to go into the film industry and they don't know what they want to be, they could listen to these podcasts and hear what being a makeup artist is really like. I mean, obviously, I'm also talking to actors and actresses because it's also fascinating how they actually came to be an actor or what they think a life as an actor or actress is like. So I had really fun podcast with the two leads of my last feature film, The Curse of Hobbs House. And, you know, like in the final end, we talked about, like, McKenna Geiler is one of the actresses, and she climbed mountains. She was doing the base camp in of Mount Everest, and it was so fun to talk about the challenge you put yourself through to actually do this climb. And I could rely in other instances, you know, like because there's a specific feeling. So it was going into ways which connect, I think, in the bigger picture to why do you choose a very challenging path. Does that make sense?
Yes, I do, because I ask questions. So I guess when you're formulating your questions, are you going to have the same angle when you interview somebody you don't know?
Well, there must be a reason why I talk to the person I don't know. And I haven't done an interview yet with the person I don't know. I said, like, this is kind of, I need to be more consistent in getting this going. But I would start with the angle, like you do, if you have a filmmaker and you have watched their work, then this is your starting point. So the same goes for here. So I mean, I wouldn't just talk to random people. This is the same, like if you go somewhere on the street, you wouldn't just kind of chat up a random person. There's always something which is interesting about them to get into a talk. And that's, as I said, that's the starting point for the questions.
I see that, but I think I can interview random people no problem. I think that's just my
style. I believe you.
I mean, I really think I probably could have a makeup artist on this show and have a full-on conversation with them.
Yeah, but maybe you should.
Maybe. If one wants to come on, I'm shouting it out now, feel free to come on. Better be a lot of makeup in the film, but same. So what do you plan on doing with your podcast in the future? Is this the way it sounds like it's just you're hooking up with your friends you haven't seen?
Of sorts. But then again, also what I really like, the initial idea was because I need to create a buzz around my films. Now, I would say, obviously, I'm spending like almost everyone else on the planet, I'm spending time on social media. But the thing is, I would say I'm not really interested in kind of posting random stuff about myself, which is usually your kids or your food. And I don't want to post neither of those things. I don't think my food is very interesting. And I think my kid can actually make, he can make his own decision when he wants to start posting photos of himself online. So for that specific reason, I need other things to talk about. So I'm sitting boring in front of my computer and do some work, or I'm on set. I have no time to post anything. So therefore, I need like content. And then that was kind of a nice bridge to see, okay, that has something to do with my films. It tells people who I am. And usually you watch movies because you're interested in the people in it or in whoever has done it. You know, it's very seldom for most people that they just watch a film because they like the poster. This is also a reason, but, you know, then, like, if you like the poster, the next click is usually, okay, who's in it? And then who has directed it eventually? And if you recognize those names or you recognize a face on the cover, you more likely hit play. So if people start to know me, more likely they will watch my films, which is the ultimate aim, plus having some fun and catch up with my friends.
Now you make me feel bad. I don't produce any films. I just produce a crazy podcast online, and I think people know who I am by now. Maybe not. I don't know. I'm never worried about it.
Why do you do it?
Why do I podcast? I love watching film. I love meeting people, and I like learning things. And I find throughout the podcast and years of doing this, I learn things about people I didn't know. Like until I started interviewing directors and writers and actors, there's things I never knew.
So, yeah, this is, I think it's a very good reason. And I think that, so if you, just when you said it, my ultimate reason why I'm doing films is, A, I like to tell stories, but B, I like to connect with people. And that also can have different forms, right? So connecting with these people, then in a podcast, is more or less also fitting the bill.
I think anything. I mean, I promote myself through other people, but I meet indie filmmakers such as yourself that I never would have discovered or be able to introduce other people to if I hadn't done this.
Yeah, I can see that.
And for a guy that watches over 400 films a year, I got to find something different to watch. So I'm on to fun questions if you're ready for them.
I'm not prepared, which means we have to get into it right now.
Fine. One language you would prefer to speak other than German and English?
Well, I'm not fluent in any other language, but actually the language I really, really want to learn is sign language, because my son is deaf. And then he can hear with his hearing aids, like with his cochlear implants, but if he wants to go to sleep or in the night, he puts them off. And then he tells you what to do and you can't answer. So he comes and wants you to do things and you can tell him no because he doesn't understand it. So I really want to talk to him during nights when he cannot hear me when I talk in German to him.
The 1 mil you're going to have at your execution.
Say again, please.
The 1 mil you're going to have, your last meal for your execution.
Oh, well, that's a tough one. What? I really don't know. The first thing coming to mind is, would I care? And if I do care, possibly it would be some sort of sweets or something my mom is cooking.
Okay. Last question. I guess we'll make it easy. I'll make this one easier for you. Your favorite thing to have breakfast in bed? Or do you prefer to have breakfast in bed?
I never have breakfast in bed.
That's upsetting.
The reason is I have a 4-year-old boy. It just doesn't work that way.
Fair enough. We'll give you one more just for fun. What's the next film you would like to see in the theater?
Actually, we just watched Venom on VOD, and I think there's like Venom 2 in the making, and we enjoyed it that much that I really would like to see that on a big screen.
So before we go, tell everybody where they can find the last statement, and again, promote your podcast and tell me if it's on iTunes.
The podcast should be on iTunes. I put it up on Anchor, and that means it should be like everywhere on Spotify and all the other outlets. It's called J Blockbuster Adventures. And last statement is part of the series We Are All Human, and it's on Amazon Prime US.
Just US, not Canada? You're leaving us out again?
Well, there is no kind of tick box Canada. But the thing is, like, honestly, like, I hope it's up on Canada, but I think you need to check for me because I can tell it's not in Prime Germany yet, but we are working on all the other countries.
Okay. Thank you for your time, as always. Come back anytime. Have a great day.
Thank you.
Hey, I just want to say thank you for listening to this great interview. We have more on our website at www.extrafeatures.ca. And if you enjoyed it, can you please go to iTunes and leave us an iTunes review and like us on our Facebook page. Thank you.